Welcome back to the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today we're going to talk about a syndrome that I think plagues us all. It's the fact that we tend to overthink, overanalyze, and basically care too much about what other people think. Like, this actually was a huge problem for me early on in my life, like dating back to, I think, starting at 4 years old. I'm still not completely over it yet.
When you started talking, I thought, oh, this is going to be a therapy session for me. But then when you just said you've been dealing with this since you were four, maybe it's a therapy session for you.
Well, I don't think I need therapy anymore. I think I told this story before, so I don't want to rehash it again. But I used to just be this quiet guy back when I was younger in elementary school. And I just tried to blend in because that's kind of how we Asians are brought up to be.
I mean, you really think it's cultural?
I think it's cultural. I think we're brought up not to shake things up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whereas I feel like Americans, it's like the complete opposite. You guys are brought up to like just voice your mind and do all that stuff. We didn't get that stuff.
Okay. To be clear, you are an American.
A Chinese American, Asian American. Right? I mean, aren't you taught to like speak your mind and voice up?
Not as a female.
Not as a female. Okay. So maybe an American male.
Yes. If you are an American male, you are taught to speak up. Right. Outside of that, you're out of luck.
But so we're talking about speaking up and stuff, but that kind of ekes over to other areas of your life, right? Because if you're afraid to speak up, that means you're probably afraid to take action. You're probably thinking to yourself every time you need to say something or do something just to make sure that it's okay based on what other people think.
Yeah. You know what's funny about this, though? My mind is running, like thoughts are just racing through my mind right now. Because you said that you are, I don't think anyone's ever like completely over this. I think there's always a little bit of us that cares what other people think. I think there's very few people out there that are just complete, you know.
Well, let me rephrase that. Okay. I stopped caring what people think who I don't know.
Yes. Okay. For sure. I'm not there yet. But when you said you started this at four, you know, like you can remember feeling this way. I have the opposite. I can remember being sort of a rebel as a kid, like not caring. I think I've told this story before, maybe not on the podcast, but when I was set, I was a tomboy and I was a legit, like I don't think this is a joking matter, but I joke that if like the whole gender identity thing was a topic that was going on when I was a kid, I would have totally thought I was a boy because I played with boys. I dressed in like boy clothing. I didn't have any like little really girlfriends. I didn't do girly things. You know, I played football after school with the boys in the neighborhood to the point where it was one of my good little friend's birthday parties. And my mom had this blue, I still remember this blue Polly Flinders dress with like smocking and like puffy sleeves. And I was like, I'm not wearing that to the party because I can't play in a dress. Like, this is a dress you wear to church. And she was like, no, you're going to wear the dress. And we went back and forth, and I think I was seven, and like probably every other little girl at that party was wearing a dress, and I did not go to the party because I refused to wear the dress. My mom said, like, if you don't wear the dress, you don't go to the party, and I was like, I'm not going. Like, if I can't wear my blue athletic shorts, I'm not there. And I would have been totally fine to show up at that party as the only kid in like athletic wear, and I wouldn't have cared. But as I got older, I started caring a lot, so I flip-flopped.
Interesting. So when I grew up, I used to dress in these corduroys. I'd have a collared shirt and then a sweater over it. That was my staple.
You're the little J. Crew.
No, but these were sweaters that were hand knitted by my grandma. So, I mean, I look back on those pictures, I can chuckle now. But at the time, like, I don't know if I got made fun of, but you can't really play in those clothes.
No. But yeah. I mean, you're the kid who also like kept their toys in the packaging. So
yeah, that's true. That's true. I would still do that today, by the way.
I know. Well, that's a whole other episode.
But anyway, so this leaks into other areas of your life. So I've told this story, I think, on my other podcast before, but there was this guy. Let's call him Al. He used to steal all my jokes.
Oh, yes, I know about him.
Yeah, you know. And like, I would just whisper something funny, and he would say it out loud, and all the kids would laugh, and he'd take credit for my joke. And I didn't break out of that shell until I went to nerd camp where everyone was like me, right? Everyone was afraid to speak up. And so it was a chance for me to just do whatever the heck I wanted to because I would never see these kids again. And that's when I broke out of my shell.
So you went to a camp that was filled with a group of people just like you. So yes. You had the ability to be different.
It sounds funny, but I think it was more the fact that I would never see these people again.
Okay.
Right? But it was like this 6-week overnight camp in a different state.
Yeah. Okay, so that's interesting because, and I know that I have, like, I know I have true issues with this because, like, for me, I'd almost rather, like, do something horrific in front of people I know than do, because you know about the time that I flew and my napkin dropped in the person's lap next to me and I went to grab it and literally grabbed her crotch trying to grab my napkin. And I was horrified in the process. And I'm never going to see that girl ever again. She's hopefully not listening to the podcast. But like my level, and then I had to fly for like 6 more hours on a plane with her. But like that type of stuff still haunts me versus like I've done super embarrassing things around you and I don't care.
Okay. Well, I think around me is different because I'm probably not going anywhere. That's true.
I got you locked down.
But if you're trying to impress someone, let's say.
Yeah.
Which yeah. you don't do. You don't try at all, obviously. I was thinking that napkin thing, at least it wasn't a guy.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like either way, it's bad. Either way.
Yeah. Okay. So what does that have to do with caring what other people think? Sorry.
Because I was much more embarrassed to have done that to a total stranger. Like, I cared way more what she thought than I would have, like, if I would have, not that I would ever do that to you, but, like, if I was sitting next to Andrea, I would have just grabbed it and not cared. But I guess there's a familiarity there, too.
Right. See, I mean, the whole point of it is, if there isn't that familiarity, and you're never going to see these people again, like, you can do whatever you want, right? It's like resetting. It's like, let's say you have a bad reputation where you live. It's like moving to a completely different state and starting fresh.
So you're telling me I need to move to another state?
Well, I actually think you speak your mind a little bit more today.
I do. Right. But here's the thing. It took me a very long time and actually a lot of therapy to be able to speak my mind. I'm trying because I've been trying to think about this as we've been talking, like at what point in my life did I get to the point where I did care? Because I was a mouthy kid. I was a mouthy teenager. Like I think back to some of the things that I said and it's embarrassing to me because I didn't care. But then at some point, like in my adult life, it shifted and I stopped thinking I could say what I thought.
OK, so this is your therapy session now. Yeah. Do you know what happened?
I think I do. Okay, I think both do.
Really? Okay.
I do.
All right. Okay. I think I know what that is too, but that's a topic for a different episode, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. So for me, it always comes down almost always to females.
Okay.
Right?
What do you mean?
Someone maybe that you like or have a crush on say something that shuts you down and that makes you, you know, kind of timid. I'm trying to think like when that's happened so often. So I
yeah. all these females you have crushes on these days?
Yeah, these days.
All one of them?
Talking about when I was younger, right? All it takes is one thing to traumatize you for life.
Okay, I totally agree with you on that. It takes one time of you speaking your mind and getting shut down, no matter how vicious or not vicious it is. It doesn't. And sometimes the people that do it to you don't even know that they've done it, right?
Right.
Like they don't know that they've caused that reaction in you. But it just is one time. And then that can affect you for the rest of your life.
But on the flip side, if you kind of get rewarded for being bold, which is what happened at that nerd camp,
mm-hmm.
because no one was the type, well, I shouldn't say no one, but there were much less people who were just kind of, you know, speaking their mind and being bold that I felt popular at that camp.
Yeah.
And so I came back and I stuck with that personality and it actually ended up being a lot better for my social life.
Yeah. So this is interesting because I can remember I used to do corporate consulting, as you know, and I was sitting in a meeting once. This is probably 10 years ago. And in the meeting was my friend Andrea, who was also consulting. And if you guys know her, she's got a strong personality. She always speaks her mind, good or bad. And I was very intimidated like when I went into the corporate world because I had no experience at a real job, right? My only real job that I'd ever had is like working at a deli and then as a bartender. So I didn't understand how things worked in an office. So the first time I was ever there, I kind of said to myself, I'm going to keep quiet, observe, and kind of pick up on the nuances of corporate life and then behave and act accordingly. So we would go into these meetings and I would sit quietly. And then if they asked me a question, I would answer. Obviously, I'd provide feedback, but I wasn't very vocal at all. We were in a meeting and I think we had been maybe doing consulting for 6 months or so. And Andrea was pushing back on a feature of this product that we were developing. And I felt like she had pretty valid concerns. She was bringing up things that I felt like were pretty reasonable. And one of the senior people at the company stood up, a male, and said, I forget his exact words, but it was kind of like, why do you always have to be so angry, or why do you have to cause so much trouble? Or like, he basically called her a disruptor, right? And not in a positive disruptor sort of way, but in a shut up and know your place sort of way, but in corporate speak. So it wasn't totally right. Inappropriate. And in that moment, it was a message to me of, don't have an opinion. You're in here to say yes to our opinions. Even though they were paying us a stupid amount of money to come in and give our opinion, they actually didn't want our opinion if it didn't jive. Well, not everybody did. Certain people in the company were not like that at all. There were some great people at that company. But there were also people who made it very clear that if we had a differing opinion, it was disruptive and angry. It wasn't a differing opinion. And in that moment, I was, you know, I'm thinking, I'm never saying a thing. My mouth is shut for the rest of the time because I don't want someone to stand up and call me out in the middle of a meeting.
Huh. So, but Andrea, I would imagine, didn't back down, right?
You know, I don't remember because I was, at that point, I was just kind of in my own spiraling world of what the heck just happened because I just felt like it was really rude. And I'm sure Andrea was very passionate about whatever she was saying. I'm sure she was animated about it. But at the same time, I also felt like the whole point of us working for the company was to give them differing opinions. And then when it became clear that that wasn't going to be okay, it completely changed how I operated in that company for a really long time. And it only took when I started working with different people in the company that seemed that they really encouraged that differing opinion that I felt free to actually say things that didn't agree with other people.
Interesting. I actually didn't start speaking my mind at my day job until I stopped caring. And ironically, like I go to the meetings and say, hey, I think this feature is a bad idea. I think it sucks. Yeah. That's when I started getting promoted, when I stopped caring anymore. Isn't that ironic?
So do you, okay, but so that's the question. Do you, one, how did you stop, why did you stop caring? And then two, that seems sort of sad that you had to stop caring to be able to speak your mind and then you were rewarded.
Well, once Bumblebee Linen started making a lot of money and I didn't care about getting fired anymore.
Yeah.
That's when I, so let me just tell you another thing that I did once. It was, there was like the VP, like the highest guy in a meeting in a conference room, but I booked the conference room right after his meeting and his meeting was running about 15 minutes late. So I walked in there and I kicked him out of his meeting. And everyone was like, what are you doing? What are you doing? I was like, hey, we got this meeting and there's only a limited amount of time. I'm just telling him. I didn't rudely kick him out. I just, hey, right. we got this conference room. And he was like, well, can we finish up? And I was like, yeah, how long is it going to take? He's like, we need another half hour or so. I was like, oh man, we really have to have this meeting. And then he was nice about it. He ended up leaving.
Yeah.
But anyway, I probably would not have done that early on in my career. Let's just say.
Because you were worried about getting fired or you thought
it could
lead. Well,
I mean, you know, I didn't want to get on the guy's bad side, but
right.
this time I was like, okay, well, if he fires me, he fires me. Big deal.
So do you think it was totally about not caring about getting fired because you had another like revenue stream in Bumblebee, or was it partly because I can see that, but part of it to me also feels like, so you built this successful business in Bumblebee not totally by yourself because you have Jen. So you and Jen built this successful business without any help. So do you think there was also this level of confidence that you had? So it wasn't just about not getting fired. It was like, hey, I'm actually pretty good at things and I think what I have to say matters.
No, I think because it's a completely different skill set.
True.
Surprisingly, microprocessor design and audience building and e-commerce, hankies, very different industries.
Is it?
Yeah.
Tell me more. because to me, it's success, right? So you've had success. So you sort of have this confidence of like, hey, I know how to be successful. So I don't need you to be successful.
That confidence doesn't translate. Like if you put me back in that environment today,
Yeah.
You know, I would still be deferring to the people, obviously, that have been doing it much longer. Yeah. It was really the fact that I didn't care anymore. It was kind of like that nerd camp all over again. Like, I didn't care. and then my opinions were actually, you know, what's funny is if you just go up in a meeting and you say something with confidence,
yes,
then people will tend to believe you. And what's also something that I discovered over the years is that if you're loud about something, people will try to appease you, whereas the people who stay quiet never get their own way.
That's very true.
Right? So you have to ask for something. So, and I have this, my wife and I have these arguments all the time, because if we're out and about and she wants something and she's like, oh, never mind, it's okay. I was like, no, I'm gonna go up and talk to that guy and you know, tell him. She's like, no, don't cause a fuss, don't cause a fuss. And then I'll do it anyway. And then we'll get
what we
want.
Yeah, I've seen this in action.
Right? Yeah, you've seen it, yeah.
Yeah.
And then she's like all embarrassed. But I mean, she was complaining about it. And if I hadn't done anything, she probably would have complained about it the entire day.
Yeah.
It was more about self-preservation.
You just didn't want to hear her complaining. That's what it boiled down to. Okay. So how do you, because you said you had to get to the point where you didn't need the job to be bold, but I think there's got to be another way to get there, because you can't just wait until you can't just wait until you could potentially get fired to feel like you can have confidence and not care what other people think.
It's true. But I think, like, if you really need something, like, let's say that job is your everything, you lose it, you're toast.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's tough. Like, if you're worried about pissing off your boss.
Yeah.
I mean, it's happened. I've had employees piss me off, and then you kind of in your mind go, ugh, you know, he's back again to cause trouble, and maybe he'll be the first one on the chopping block. Right.
Yeah.
If there's a layoff.
Yeah.
So really.
That's depressing, Steve.
Well, I mean, it's true. I'm just talking about reality here.
Yeah.
So you really have to just kind of diversify your stuff to the point where you don't care and you have a reason not to care, I think. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I feel like first of all, I feel like so many people struggle with this. So many people could keep quiet, especially in today's environment, because everyone is so on edge about everything. It feels like you can't ever, you know, unless you want to start a little mini war on anything, you can't speak your mind. So I feel like there's got to be a way to not be so worried about what other people think, but also not live in fear that you're going to lose your job.
I mean, we're talking about jobs right now. I mean,
yeah,
in real life, without jobs in the equation, like, I always ask myself, what is the worst that can happen?
Okay.
Right. And who is this person? So just this morning, I woke up to a bunch of Twitter trolls who were trolling my last tweet.
What was your last tweet?
It was something about Netflix. The average person watches 3 hours of Netflix a day.
You were Netflix shaming, weren't you?
I was.
Yeah.
And I said, well, why don't you just take those 90 hours and work on something for real? And then, I mean, the trolls were, I mean, they weren't harsh, I get. I mean, they were harsh, but they weren't like ripping on like Chinese people or anything, which I get also.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's like, who is this guy? It didn't affect me at all, really.
Yeah.
Besides the fact that I'm talking about it right now, I guess.
Yeah. But now we're processing.
But stuff like that, I mean, like, if this guy's like a, even if he was somebody, I wouldn't even care. Like, if he was a CEO of some company, I wouldn't really care. I mean, they don't directly affect me.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a little bit. Because a lot of people that listen to this are probably content creators or live their life a little bit on social media or have some online presence. And I know a lot of people who have experiences with trolls, and it really does affect them in what they say and can even get them to stop, like, posting.
Well, you just don't feed them, right?
So when you get a troll, do you not respond?
Well, it depends what mood I'm in.
You're feeling,
like, if
feisty.
I have a really snappy comeback, then I'll use it, and then I'll just chuckle to myself. And then they'll reply back, and if you can come up with something good. If I have something good, I'll usually... Well,
I've heard some of your comebacks. Don't do them.
Well, he said, instead of spouting off this stuff, why don't you help other people with real stuff? And then I said, well, instead of, like, trolling someone else's random tweet, why don't you go do something for yourself? Don't you have something better to do? You know,
you should have been like, for three easy payments, I will help you learn how to import items from Asia.
But anyways, I think people don't really consider the consequences. Like, Jen and I, we actually get into fights about this all the time. Like, when I write something that's even remotely has the potential to piss someone off, she'll, like, question it, and then she'll make me change it. So I actually don't let her read anything before I publish it anymore.
Okay.
Not that I'm controversial at all, right? I mean,
No, you're not.
Not at all, but, like, occasionally maybe I'll use some Asian reference, she thinks might piss off somebody. But that's...
Like, because it's... She feels like there's a racist undertone to that or a stereotype or...
Maybe. But you know me. I make Asian jokes all the time. So it's...
Well, you're allowed to. You're Asian.
But it's part of my personality, right?
Right.
I'm bagging on... Yeah.
Well, and it's funny because you have a fairly large contingency of Asian male fans who think your jokes are hilarious. Like, it's... I think it makes you relatable because a lot of other people have had shared experiences regarding, like, your childhood and things like that that you joke about and talk about. And I think people at the end of the day know that there's a level of humor in that, right? That you're not being derogatory towards anybody.
And I'm sure I'm pissing some people off, but that's okay. I mean, here's the thing. If you try to put out vanilla stuff, then you're never going to succeed. That's my opinion.
I totally agree with you on that. I often wonder because I think for most people, this is like a paralyzing fear.
Right.
Of saying something or doing something to offend people or to drive people away or have people not like you.
Well, let's shift this conversation to you because you, I would categorize as a people pleaser. Like, I don't think you've ever said anything offensive to anyone back, right? It's rare, let's say.
Like, if someone says something to me, I will not be offensive back?
Yeah.
No, I will not. I probably will now.
You probably will now? Okay.
Mm-hmm. I did, actually. I told you about my airplane experience.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay.
So I was on an airplane that was severely delayed, and we landed, and then, of course, the jet bridge was malfunctioning. So everybody's standing up in the aisles of the plane because everybody's going to miss their connecting flight. And it's in Atlanta. And, you know, I landed Terminal E. I have to get to Terminal T, which is about a mile and a half, I think, on foot. And my plane is already boarding at this time. So I'm on the other plane. My plane is boarding. I'm thinking to myself, I know how fast I can run. I know the length that I have to run. There's no way I'm making my flight, you know, unless the flight gets delayed. And we're all standing in the aisle, and I feel this, like, push in my back. And at first I thought, okay, maybe someone's getting their luggage out because everyone's, like, crammed in there. And sometimes people – I mean, I get bumped all the time on airplanes. I'm sure you do too. People just trying to move around and shift. Well, then I feel it a second time and then a third time. And I realize that the person behind me is literally pushing me in the back. And then I'm irritated because I'm thinking, nobody on this plane is moving. I am not causing you to delay. This is completely out of my control. The guy in front of me is 4 feet from my face, or 4 inches from my face. So it's not as if I can go anywhere. And she pushes me again. And so now I'm in this, like, internal debate because all I can think of is all the videos I've seen on TikTok and Instagram of, like, fights on airplanes. But I'm also thinking I've already missed my flight. So if I get detained by TSA, I mean, you know, I'm probably not getting home today anyway. So I'm having this whole mental debate and someone who's physically violent towards you, you're kind of like, what level are they willing to go to if they're already pushing you? So by, like, the fifth push, I just decided that I was going to stand up for myself, which I know I shouldn't have taken 5 pushes, but I feel like this is progress for me.
Note to self, you can push Tony up to 4 times without
penalty.
Up to
4 times. And so I had decided that the next time she pushed me, because I assumed she was going to push me again because there was a pattern here, that I was going to turn around and say, I need you to stop pushing me, please, which seemed, and I was going to say it loud enough so that everybody around us could, you know that she was pushing me and hopefully film it so that I had evidence that I didn't start a fight on an airplane. And the minute that I had, like, made that decision, she screams in my ear, you need to move. And there's nobody moving on the plane. So there's nowhere that I can go outside of back into my seat. And so, and then that just triggered, like, every piece of anger that I have towards all of society for my entire life. So I whip around and I look her straight in the eyes and I said, nobody on this plane is moving. Nobody can get off the plane, including you. Everybody's late, and you need to stop pushing me. And she was shocked. I mean, her face was like, I don't think she thought anyone would stand up for themselves, which to me is, and she was like 60 years old. It wasn't as if she was some teenager that, you know, had just needed an attitude problem. She was a grown woman. And I think she was also shocked because I probably had 5 or 6 inches on her too. And I'm thinking, well, if this goes to a fight, you're losing, lady. But
Florida woman beats up old elderly woman over a pushing incident.
I mean, she was wearing slacks. I was like, I got this. So anyway, and then I just turned back around. But I mean, my whole body like was adrenaline was like pumping through. I mean, I was like fight or flight at that point. But she didn't touch me for the, and we stood there for another 10 minutes or so. She didn't touch me. She didn't do anything. But it felt really, really good to stick up for myself. And it took like anger for me to get to the point where like, I don't care if she decks me, punch me in the face. Like, I don't care. Which is probably not healthy, which is why I still need to work on this. But it felt good to kind of not let someone bully me.
Interesting. I was thinking to myself, if I turn around, it was some like 6'5", 300-pound guy, I'd be like, oh yeah, sorry, I'm out of line. You know, we're all running late here. Just shove me. Maybe I can get this line moving.
Yeah. If you shove me hard enough, we can get the whole plane out. Well, it was, you know, I'm not an idiot. I did look down and saw her leg and realized that it was a female. She didn't look that big and she was wearing older woman shoes. So if I would have seen like Kyrie's or LeBron's, you know, I might not have turned around and faced a 6'5" man. But I kind of knew that I was okay as far as if this goes to like some crazy level, I'm going to be fine. But after I did that, it was so funny. I was proud of myself for doing it. And it also felt empowering, kind of like, you know what? People can't get away with this. Like, I need to be able to stick up for myself. And I'm not this person that's going around and like righting wrongs. I don't feel like that. I don't need to go solve all the injustices of the world. But when someone's clearly out of line, which she was, it's like, yeah, you need to stick up for yourself. Quit trying to keep the peace. Because maybe she won't do it to the next person. Because I feel like she's someone who's gotten away with that behavior for a really long time.
This does not bode well for our partnership if this continues.
You've never pushed me on an airplane. We've flown a lot together.
Okay, so let's kind of steer this back towards business now. We've been teaching our class for what? A couple years now?
2 years.
2 years, yeah. Right?
Almost.
And how many people are just kind of afraid to take that step of just putting themselves out there, especially on video, I would say, right? That's probably the
80%.
And it's, I don't know what the best way to get them to do this is, but I mean, for me, it's analyzing the consequences and not caring. So how did you get to that point of the ability to stand up to an elderly 60-year-old woman?
To be clear, I'm old too. So I think I like the analyzing the consequences. What's the worst thing that happens? And on the plane, I probably, if I had analyzed the consequences, really, I probably wouldn't have turned around. Because to me, it just became about like justice. Because the consequences, had it gone south, were not going to be good for me or her, right? I mean, because even if I didn't lay a hand on her, I could still have been detained or like something bad could have happened from that. So I think the analyzing the consequences is great, because I think if you sit down and think, we have people do this all the time. I can't go live. I can't do video. Can't do video live. Well, what's the worst thing that happens on live? Nobody shows up. Who cares? They can watch the replay. And if nobody shows up, great. You're less nervous. Nobody's watching you live. So, you know, that's one of the things I think about. I'm too nervous to go live. What if I get trolls? Ignore them. Block them. It's good practice. And chances are, if you have enough watchers to have trolls, then your own audience is going to come in and defend you. This happens with Tiffany Ivanovsky all the time. She gets tons of trolls because she has so many people in her lives. Not tons of trolls, but she gets a troll every time she goes live. And her audience is the one that comes back at them. She doesn't even have to deal with the trolls because she has her audience. So I think thinking about the consequences is, or like what's the worst case scenario, is really helpful. I think for me, something that's really helpful is to have your own hype crew, which sounds crazy, but I think you have to have people in your life that are your cheerleaders no matter what. I was actually talking about this right before we started recording, that I need people that are like Team Tony no matter what. I mean, they're not going to let me do stupid things, but they're the people that hype you up, that comment like positive on your photos or your posts. Like, they're the people that are sharing your stuff. And everybody has those people in their life, whether it's personally or professionally. And sometimes you even have to ask them, or you have to be that for them, and then it reciprocates. But I think getting people in your corner is really helpful, because it gives you more confidence to say what you want to say and write the things you want to write and convey the message that you want to convey, because you have people cheering for you.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's about risk reward. So let me give you an example. You know how I am when I meet new people, like even people that I kind of admire and want to get to know. I'm a little bold with my communication. Like, I show off like kind of the way I really am right away, instead of just being super nice from the start. Mm-hmm. And the goal here is to be memorable, because you don't want to just be someone who just kind of blends in. But I mean, sometimes that backfires, obviously, and it has backfired.
It has backfired on you a few times.
But when I you know, establish rapport with someone, they're not going to forget who I am.
Correct.
So again, this has to do with not, for me, it's all about not caring, or finding some reason not to care. Mm-hmm. And like what you said, right? What's the worst that can happen? So if I can get myself not to care, then I can act normal. But it's really tough if like a whole bunch of stuff hinges on this one thing, which arguably I would say is not healthy. Like, if you're doing stuff where the success of one action has a huge consequence, then I couldn't really live like that.
I think the other thing to think about, and this is where I think having your own hype team is helpful, is that, like you said, when you meet new people, you don't have the phony niceties that most people have when they're meeting people for the first time. You just come in as you. And to me, that's actually pretty important, because what are you going to do? Come in as a phony, and then you end up becoming friends with them, and then they have to realize who you really are. You don't want to become friends with people or meet people or have interactions and transactions with people who think you're somebody different than who you really are as a person, unless you're a total jerk and then you just need to be better. But I think for you, it works. And I think for anybody it works, because if they don't like you and they don't like your personality and how you handle things, then they're probably not people for you. They're probably not people you want to work with or partner with or whatever.
Yeah. And then on the content side, if you're putting out a video, like, it's actually really hard to be someone who you aren't consistently when you're creating content also.
Okay. This is funny.
Okay.
And this is where I think this is so true. I have a pretty conservative audience for my website, and I have to be very careful about the things that I say and certain words I would never use. And that's fine. That's who my audience is, and I'm okay with that. But the problem is, as I've grown older and I have, you know, this audience, it doesn't really match my personality as much anymore. So I feel like a lot of times I'm fake. Or not fake. It's not fake, because it's not like I don't believe what I'm saying. I'm just saying it in a very different way than you and I would talk, right? So this weekend, recently, I would say over the past year on Instagram, I've started to use Instagram as my channel to just be me and really put out a lot of who I am. Now, my Instagram isn't directly connected to my website. I mean, like, you can find it from my website, but it's not, stuff doesn't get posted, you know, to my Facebook page, my business Facebook page from Instagram. And what I found is that people love my Instagram, love it. I probably get 20 DMs a day. I get people messaging me. I love what you posted. I love that you said this. I'm going through XYZ. This is hilarious. You're so funny. Brands message me about stuff all the time. And I've realized that, you know what, maybe my audience isn't exactly what I thought they were to begin with. And not that the audiences are necessarily the same, but this weekend I cleaned out my kitchen, and my kitchen was a wreck. I have kids. They're so messy. And I was very honest and sarcastic in my kitchen clean out. And I made, as my daughter said, I watched your entire series of stories and it took me 17 minutes. So I made 17 minutes of video stories over the weekend. And apparently she tortured herself and watched it all. But in it, I was very honest and real about my kids and messiness and stupid stuff I had bought and things I was throwing away. And it got more feedback than anything I've ever done on Instagram. And it made me realize I just need to be myself. I need to say my opinions. I need to say controversial in the mom blog world. It's not controversial in real life. I need to say those things and talk about those things and not feel bad about it or not worry that I'm going to offend somebody. Because if I offend somebody, they're probably not my people. And I need to be able to connect with my people. And so by being genuine, I'm connecting with the people that actually matter to me. It's like the not caring. If you don't like who I am, I don't care anymore because you're not probably a person I want following me and because you don't get me. I think there's always this fine line, especially when you are in like the parenting space, because if you make anything about your kids, there's always going to be someone that says like, oh, you don't love your kids. And it's like, well, of course I love my kids, but I hate the fact that they live 27 cups out every night. Like those are not mutually exclusive. Like you can love your kids and still hate the fact that they do something. So, and you can joke about it and make other moms feel like, hey, I'm not alone. My kids are pigs too. And I realized that I needed to be more authentic on social media because it actually does resonate with people and you can't keep it up to be phony. I've watched people be phony on video. It doesn't work. It doesn't work over the long term at all.
I think crash and burn. I think you need to change your domain now to like, instead of the happy housewife, it's like the jaded housewife.
Yes.
Or the housewife who's been beaten down by the rigors of life.com.
The housewife who gave up. She's beaten into submission by her messy children.
You know what's funny is when I think of the happy housewife, just if I didn't know you or anything, I'd think about like this old school, you know, housewife who is, you know, taking care of the home and their kids and always be cheerful about it.
Yeah.
That's the picture that's in my mind.
Well, and when I started the site all those years ago, I really did want to, my goal was to kind of teach people some of the lost arts of, because I still do all those things and I still like to do all that. Like I still like to cook. I still like to sew. I like to make projects, do things. I want to, and so many people these days don't know how to do any of that. And I wanted to teach people about that way of life, not so that you could do all of it, but that you could pick up like, hey, you know, I do want to make homemade pizza dough, right? I don't really want to do anything else that you're doing, but pizza dough sounds good. But I'm also realizing that with that comes a lot of judgment sometimes. And, you know, I know you're not a mom, so you don't experience some of this like shaming, but there's all this, you know, you took your kids through McDonald's, like you're a horrible person. They should only eat organic chicken nuggets and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know what? Some days kids just are going through McDonald's and there's no shame in that. And I think what happens when you start speaking your mind and your opinion in a very polite, I mean, I'm not talking about this controversial crap that we deal with all the time on like the news and things like that, but just in life in general, it's actually freeing to people because people are like, I've thought that too, but I didn't want to say anything.
It's such a huge double standard because when I made a chicken nugget pizza for my kids, like I got all these high fives for that.
It is a double standard because if I take my kids to McDonald's, I'm a bad mom, but you make a chicken nugget pizza and people are giving you cookbook deals. What's wrong with this?
Yeah. So where do we go from here? I mean, there's a couple of different techniques that we went over on how to stop overanalyzing and caring what other people think. My solution is to analyze the consequences and then not bank your thoughts on how this one interaction is going to fundamentally make or break whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's about being respectful. I think what happens is that there's a way to say something or say your thoughts or not care what people think. And then there's a way to come across as a superior a-hole, right? And that's where I think people get it wrong. It's okay to say what you think and not care and not be paralyzed by other people's opinions. But then the flip side of that is you come across as just super cocky and unrelatable. So you have to just be you. Hopefully you're not cocky and unrelatable and say things with that little twinge of humor so that it doesn't come across in the wrong way. And I think at the end of the day, you're going to attract the people that like you and you're going to repel the people that don't. And that's what you want anyway. You don't need everybody to like you. That's too many people.
I think in order to come across as not cocky, you shouldn't take yourself too seriously. I think the people that I like to follow the most are the people who speak their minds, but they're not afraid to like make fun of themselves.
Yes, you have to be willing to make fun of yourself. It's like you can't pick on somebody else if you can't take it.
Right.
Which people seem to not be able to take. Well, I think that's what makes people, that's where it becomes problematic. If you're dishing it out, but you can't take it. Like, you're good at that. You dish it out, but you take it a ton from people too. And I think that's...
Oh yeah, I would say I take more than I dish out. Depends.
I don't know. Okay. We'll see. You spent the weekend with Jack, so I don't know. You probably took a lot.
Let me just tell you this story. So what's hilarious is, I just went to Indian Wells tennis tournament with the members of Ecom Crew, which is Mike Jackness and Dave Bryant. Dave Bryant is from Canada.
And so he's nice.
He's super nice. He has to take a COVID test like within 72 hours of flying home, right? Mm-hmm. So he was paranoid about the whole thing because some of these tests in the U.S., like, they take longer than like a day or two.
Yes. And
there's a chance that you might get a delayed response. Anyway, so what Mike did was he downloaded this fake message that said, you or someone in your family has been exposed. And he showed it to Dave. I'm like, hey, I hope this doesn't affect your test or whatever, but maybe we should quarantine. And Dave flipped the hell out. It was the funniest thing. So that was like what my weekend was like.
That's mean. That's just mean.
Yeah. Anyway, let's wrap this up. So I think when it comes to putting out content, one thing that I've learned is you really have to take a stand. You can't like toe the fence. Otherwise, no one's going to take your content seriously. You got to pick a side, stick with it, and just make sure it's something that you believe in.
Yeah. And I think because of that, if it's something that you believe in and you're your authentic self, then you need to be confident in that and realize that not everybody ever is going to like you. And you can sit with that and be okay, because the people that are on your team are solid teammates for life.
And preparation is half the battle. I think you have to be prepared to get those comments. And if you're prepared and you're not taken off guard, then you can kind of dismiss them a lot easier.
And don't let one comment ruin your day.
Right. Yeah. Because chances are you don't want to cater to that one person. I'm willing to bet that the majority of people like your stuff. It's just that one person.
Well, yeah, because it's a silent majority. People are silent. It's only the complainers that complain the loudest. So don't worry about them. Move on and focus on all the things that you're doing right.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.